Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Latin America Review. And this is our weekly live episode that we do and that we, of course, upload to our RSS feed as a podcast for all of our listeners. Obviously, every week we do one episode that is locked for our subscribers and another episode that is free for all here on YouTube and on all podcast apps. And today we're going to be talking about Brazil. Many of you will have seen the January 8th attempted putsch against the institutions in Brazil and the subsequent response, which has been the arrest of many of those involved, with even some internet jokes referring to the Lulag very amusingly in reference to the fact that many have been kept even in certain spaces by police while they're being processed. So to understand a little bit about who exactly is the now opposition in Brazil, who are the right wing in Brazil, who are the far right in Brazil, and what has been the response in defense of democracy since then, we're going to be talking there with Camila, who's there in Sao Paulo. Still there. How's it going, Camila?
It's going well. Obviously, there are developments every day. There's a lot in the news. There's a lot to understand as far as Brazil. And so that's why we have our guest Giovanni on today. He's also in Sao Paulo. Our guest today is Giovanni Del Preci, and he's an internationalist by passion, profession, and training, and he conducts postgraduate studies on the geopolitics of the Amazon. He works at the International People's Assembly and is a militant of the Movimiento Brasil Popular, the Brazil Popular Movement. And he's going to tell us some of the latest and a lot of what we haven't covered thus far. So we've been, like I said, there's been developments every single day. Today, we woke up to the news that Lula is cleaning out the police, that he made major changes to the federal police of 18 states. And he also made changes to 26 of the 27 superintendents of the Federal Highway Police. And, you know, this is really something that, you know, we've heard criticisms in Bolivia, for example, saying that they need to make these sorts of changes to make sure that another coup doesn't take place again. So it's very interesting that, you know, not long after January 8th, we're seeing these changes made in Brazil by the new government led by Lula da Silva. So Giovanni, thank you so much for being with us today, first of all.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Camila and Oli. It's a pleasure to have some exchange here, to contribute what is happening here in Brazil. But we know that what is happening here, we can see in many parts of the world. So I expect you to have this kind of connections to here with all of you guys. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So tell us, what have been the latest revelations or developments in the investigation into what took place on January 8th?
Yeah, sure. So what we are seeing here in Brazil is the investigations are in full swing. Lula and his entire government are determined to identify and punish everyone who is politically or financially involved in the terrorist attacks. There will be no amnesty. This is what we most heard in the streets and also in media. It's interesting that the liberal media, the big corporations of media is also united around that idea of no amnesty. So no amnesty, not for civilians, businessmen, as well, all police and military ranks. So it's very important to have that, because I think here in Brazil, we have the possibility. It's a great opportunity. And I really don't remember in the past of the Brazilian history that we have here the possibility to move forward an investigation, considering the responsibility of the armed force in those kinds of attacks or those kind of ideology, as we can talk here, of the far right. So I think we are seeing this kind of opportunity, and we are seeing a government that is fully committed to identify and punish everyone. And more than that, there is a new thing that yesterday, in fact, Lula, the President Lula, had a good interview here, an exclusive interview with Rede Globo, one of those big corporation, media corporates here in Brazil. And he mentioned a super important consequence, considering all the attacks on January 8th. It means the consequence at international level. So he's doing international call, making, for the Lula is, how can I say that? The consequence is the international call that President Lula is making for a great progressive alliance to be formed against fascism and Nazism all over the world. Lula is committed to talking to the rulers of all continents so that the tragedy of the far right, not so just here in Brazil, but in other parts of the world, can be defeated. So the consequence, I think we can see these two levels. Nationally, considering to identify and punish everyone that is involved on those attacks, and also the international level. It promotes this, it's been mobilizing the Lula's commitment to talk with other leaderships in all parts of the world to defeat this kind of possibility, the rise of the far right, the Nazi, and the fascism around the world. So, and around 1,500 people were arrested until now, and we could see some influence and also the participation of the public administration to facilitate the attacks. We could see, for example, it's very important to know that Anderson Torres is a guy that was the federal district secretary of public security. So he is the man, the person in charge of commanding the police during the attacks, who should have worked to prevent the attacks from occurring. And who is this guy? Mr. Torres is the former Minister of Justice of Bolsonaro. During the attack, this guy, Mr. Torres, was in Florida, the same place of Bolsonaro, where Bolsonaro is now. And also now Mr. Torres is arrested and being investigated. And so we have this kind of consequence, the latest revelations and development of the things. I can point those topics for a while, I think.
Yeah, thanks, Giovanni. And just a reminder to all the viewers that if you have any questions or comments, either for Giovanni or myself or Camilo, she's also in Brazil right now in Sao Paulo, then please let us know in the chat. We'll read them out. Giovanni, you're in Sao Paulo, right? Whereabouts in Brazil are you?
Can I just ask? Yes.
Okay, cool.
Sao Paulo. I'm here in Sao Paulo.
So with the events of January 8th, can they be considered a coup, attempted coup, or were they violent protests, or was it something perhaps too absurd to be considered an attempted coup? Or how would you see it there in Brazil?
Yes, I think it's a very important question because sometimes we cannot check, how they can plan something like this. It's a kind of an episode. But for sure, I really believe, of course, that it was a planned coup. This is important to understand because we are talking about at least 5,000 people who found the three main buildings of the Republic. It means the Supreme Court, the Presidential Palace, and the National Congress, all those three buildings without any policing and also with the doors open. How can we do that? It's impossible that this was not planned. So it's very, very important to understand that. Including the President Lula, that interview that I mentioned, he said, it's impossible, that no one inside those buildings support the terrorists to invade and to open everything, because all the doors were open. Again, all the doors were open. So someone inside the buildings helped and facilitate that attacks. And considering all the action against democracy that Bolsonaro has encouraged or participate in before and during his government, it is not at all an exaggeration that to say that Bolsonaro himself hoped that the attempted coup on January 8th would create the conditions for him to return from the United States and proclaim himself president of in the aftermath. Almost Juan Guaido, you know, the self-proclamated president, you know. So this is interesting to understand the development of the things. We can identify that the possibility of including the responsibility of Bolsonaro, even because of the silent or the ambiguous position that he's since the end of the election, that his position is can show us a kind of responsibility of his involvement in those kind of movements, fascist movements here in Brazil. The plans of the coup attempt failed because there were four super quick response. This is important to understand how this plan is failed. So because I think four main things that I can mention. So the first thing, that the Lula government act quickly to decree intervention, you know, in the federal district police, as I already mentioned, and began arresting and investigating the terrorists. So this is one thing. The second one, hundreds of international leaders publicly expressed solidarity with the newly sworn in government and with Brazil's democracy. So it's very important thing that is a quick response, all considering all of it. And the third thing, I think on January 9th, you know, hundreds of thousands of Brazilian activists and citizens took to the streets to condemn the invasion, support democracy in Brazil, and clearly say no amnesty. Again, no amnesty. And I think finally, also on January 9, I think was, you know, the last layer that could isolate the attempt of coup was, you know, the heads of the three branches of the Republic. It means the Supreme Court, the National Congress, and also the president itself, together with 27 governors of Brazil. All the governors of Brazil held an act of national unity in Brasilia, condemning the attacks and defending democracy. So though these four reactions, considering what happened here, I think this could, it was the positive action that could isolate the possibilities to move forward with the coup attempt.
Yeah, Giovanni, I think you said some really important things there. One thing is just how obviously important and crucial it was for the social movements to come out and respond the very next day. And they called for that response the very day, really just in the late afternoon. We heard from one of the leaders of the MST National Directorate, João Paulo. If
yes,
I'm correct.
João Paulo. Yes.
I don't want to get them mixed up. But so, you know, that was really important. And then of course we heard the same thing from leaders of the MTST and from other movements. And I actually went to the mobilization here in Sao Paulo, and it was so big considering it was less than 24 hours notice. And there was more than one sound truck with people, doing their own sorts of like demonstrations within the larger demonstration. And that happened in cities and towns across the country. The other impressive thing on the same day was, as you said, Lula meeting with those governors and the other key figures within the government, some of them which are obviously his opponents, were people who didn't necessarily want him to win the presidency. They accepted his victory begrudgingly. And so it was really interesting to see them all fly to Brasilia to meet with him on that day. One of the things that, I think makes it abundantly clear to me that this was, a planned attack on these government buildings. Obviously, it was premeditated. There's a lot of different things that signal that, is the different arrests that have taken place. We've seen arrests not only since January 8th, but even before that. You know, there was a plot in which they picked up explosives. And people have been arrested around the country for plotting, their own mini interventions. They didn't want to see Lula inaugurated. It's abundantly clear that something was going to take place. We just didn't know when. Can you tell us a little bit about who's been arrested who's involved, who's thought to be behind all of this, who's thought to be financing this. This is a question that we get, myself, I get asked a lot from foreign media. You know, there's a lot of claims about that this could be, that it has support from the exterior. But of course, there are a lot of people who want to see Lula out of power within Brazil. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is a super important question considering the profile, because we can, I think, identify an international pattern, you know, an international standard of this kind of social base that mobilize for those kinds of fascist ideas. And I'm talking about that because the profile of the terrorist is the reactionary supremacist people who have been calling for military intervention for years in Brazil. The kind of sons and daughters of the military regime here in Brazil, the military dictatorship. It's important to understand that Brazil lived during 21 years under a military regime. So we started a coup d'etat against the democracy of Brazil in 1964 until the end of the military regime here. It means 1985. And then our constitution, the constitution, the current constitution here in Brazil was launched, was published, you know, in 1988. So I'm trying to put that to understand the influence of the militaries inside the institutions, and also the influence of those kinds of ideas of the fascism, the Nazism, anti-democrat ideas among, you know, the Brazilian citizens. It's important to understand that, because when I'm talking about sons and daughters of the military regime, I'm talking about those people that when they were teenagers, they are living and was born during this regime, under the military regime here in Brazil. So the profile, reactionary supremacist people who have been calling for military intervention for years, claiming that Brazil is governed by communists who only want to destroy family values and freedom. It is the same social base of Trump, Orban, Le Pen, you know, Fratelli in Italy, and so on. We can identify this common agenda, you know, including the slogan of Bolsonaro during all the time of his government, and including the electoral campaign. We could identify four topics that all the time he repeated. So the supporters of Bolsonaro are voting for God, homeland, family, and freedom. So fascist slogan too. So we can identify those kind of social base. So we can also think about that those same people were the people that have been arrested, you know, and involved in that case. More than that, the latest polls indicates that about 40% of Bolsonaro supporters support the invasion of Brasilia. So it's a lot of people. It's important to remember that Bolsonaro got, you know, 5-8 million votes in the second round of elections. So therefore, there is a great challenge. So there is a great challenge here for all of us, including to the current government, to defeat this fascist ideology. So, summary, to summarize the discussion here, considering the social base here in Brazil, most of the people who were arrested are workers in the sectors of public or private security. It means police officers, security guards, people that works inside the armed force, and so on. The second sectors, farmers who persecute indigenous people and peasants, so, you know, to expand their business, killing indigenous people and peasants, and retired people. So those are, I think, that the profile, we can identify the profile of this kind of people that were arrested, you know, and is involved on that.
And what about the military in this? Bolsonaro is obviously a military man. I mean, not in a serious way, right? I think he was quite a low-ranking person. But, you know, are there sections of the military that were supportive of the idea of overturning the election results? Are they going to pop up again? And is it possible, and is there an effort to try and get rid of some of those sort of undemocratic elements within the military? You know, does Lula have support, you know, from a faction within the military as well? So yeah, there's lots of questions in one, but you know, what was the role of the military? Is there support within the military for this attempted coup? And is there a way to combat that within the armed forces?
Yeah, amazing. So I think there is a thing that we need to consider, considering the connection of Bolsonaro and the military, the institution here in Brazil. Bolsonaro is a former captain of the armed force. He was suspended from the military institution because he tried a coup against the military to explode in a specific place because of the low income that the captains received. So this is the one thing. But after he was suspended from the corporation, from the institution, he created himself as a kind of a trade unionist of the militaries. So he started his political career being a member of the parliament that defend all the ideology and the labor conditions of the military institution. It means fighting for to improve the income, the conditions of retirement of the armed force, but also the police, the state police too. So all his political career was that, to defend the past of the dictatorial regime in Brazil, to condemn any kind of leftist and policy leaders and so on, and to defend the personal agenda of the employees of the armed force. So this is, I think, one thing. But more than that, considering the role of the militaries and the politics, the history of Brazil, it's important to note that, because this is important to understand the political history of Brazil. You know, I don't know the history of all countries here in Latin America, but I think apart from the armed force of Venezuela and Cuba, I believe that what I am going to say now can help to understand the history of many Latin American countries. In Brazil, the armed force considered themselves a kind of moderating power in the national politics. Under the pretext of guaranteeing the law and order, the military extrapolates the constitutional functions of any army and ends up politically influencing national life. It is public information that the leaders of the armed force and state police force are against left-wing parties. Because of that kind of, as I mentioned, that ideology developed during 21 years of dictatorship in Brazil in the last century. So the representatives of these institutions are right-wings. So right-wing, so at least right-wing, and a huge sector of them could develop the passion for the far right, you know. So considering the government of Bolsonaro, that many of them, 8,000 of them, were employees of the government, receive high incomes and high positions inside the government. So it's difficult. This is one of the challenges, you know, that we need to face here nowadays. So how to isolate and, you know, reverse, you know, do the opposite, to put the things in the normal situation here in Brazil. So other thing I think is important to note, that there's influence and the position of the military institution here in Brazil. It even important to remember that after Lula's victory on October 3rd, 13, thousands of Bolsonaro's voters were camped out in front of the barracks, calling for military intervention. during 70 days. So 70 days, the coup plotters were camped out, and no general or captain or anyone from the armed force publicly condemned this. No one condemned this. On the contrary, many military leaders said that these people are holding peaceful and democratic protests. So I think this is important to understand, because I don't know, this is a common thing in, for example, United States, that kind of influence in the politics that the armed force has as an institution. They have to move forward the what is the constitutional functions. And in considering that, they cannot have a specific ideology, you know? So I think that this is a kind of answer that I can put here, considering the role of them.
Yeah, and you spoke a little bit about Bolsonaro himself. And one thing I always think, like, did the people that came out on January 8th, were they not thinking about the fact that Bolsonaro is not in the country, has, it seems, pretty much given up on the fight, given up on the idea of doing an autogolpe, a self-coup, while he was still in power? That's why he left the country. He seems to be walking around Orlando, in Florida, feet up. I think I recently saw a video of him playing video games in the house of that sort of ex-UFC fighter.
Enjoying his vacation in Disney World, yes.
Yeah, I understand that UFC fighter who now lives in Florida has an entire room dedicated to the Minions as well, with like Minions bed and Minions wallpaper and things like this. I don't know if Bolsonaro is staying in there, but you know, what do Bolsonaro supporters say about this, about what he's doing, about the fact that the leader is not there in the struggle with them, is not even making statements, even from Florida, in their support? Does this not put a dampener on the supporters?
Yeah, this is a mess. It's a crazy thing, because until today, Bolsonaro, if you can check his profile on social medias, you can see that he put himself as a president yet. He's all the days sharing information about his government. He's simple. Until today, do not congratulate, for example, Lula to the victory, considering the victory of Lula and so on. So he himself is mobilizing the thing. But since the end of the last year, he has a kind of shift in his speech, considering that now I did all that I could do. Now it's everything in your hand. People, do what you need to do. Move forward with what you know that what is right to do. So he's putting this kind of, that's why I mentioned that he has a position of being the silence or being ambiguous. So all the times is the way that he can move forward this social base to all the time stretch, you know, the possibilities of coup or the possibility to don't be arrested, so or something like this. And more than I really believe that Bolsonaro is not the only leader of this fascist movement. In fact, I think that the things now overcome. It's a kind of, if we can compare as Bolsonaro is a kind of seed that, you know, was cropped, and now we can see many fascist movements that not are aligned directly with the Bolsonaro command. More than that, now the people, you know, we have thousands of people that could buy a gun. We have, you know, we have three times more guns in Brazil because during of the government of Bolsonaro, the people now can, he facilitate many, many laws to facilitate the, especially the right wing. He could from many sides to ensure that the right wing is buying his weapons and stimulate all the time the coup, to, you know, all the time the speech to close the Supreme Court. So we have, and especially if we can connect with this path of the far right here in Brazil that are sons and daughters of the military regime. So we have a fertile ground to more than Bolsonaro. We have fascist movements here in Brazil, and I don't think that they are depending on the Bolsonaro commands anymore. So I think he's an important leader, but he's not, you know, we just need to wait what Bolsonaro will talk about that. Many people are doing the thing by themselves.
We're going to move on to other issues because I think they're really interesting and very important. Editorially, I think it's very important for us to cover, as Kausatu knew, some of the things that, you know, that this new government is doing. But just one last question, which is even just before I came on and joined you guys for this stream, there was another rumor on Twitter that says that, and this is purely a rumor, we see things like this all the time, that the army is meeting because there's threats of these people taking over the army barracks once again next week. I don't know if you heard that one today. So what do you think are the chances that some other sort of plot is now underway, is now being planned, especially since we saw, as you pointed out earlier, all these leaders from around the country coming together with Lula, and a lot of the people who are supposed to be his opponents denounced what took place on January 8th. We saw so many international denouncements. Do you think that these people are going to continue trying to disrupt the government? And do you think they'll do it so soon?
Yeah, I really believe that there is a permanent agenda of those kind of people, you know, all the time to destabilize the Lula's government. So this is a permanent agenda of the far right. But considering the consequence that we already talked about here of the January 8 attacks, I really don't believe that they have any chance of success about that, at least for a while, you know. So I really think that the investigation of everyone that are involved in that, and it will be a kind of example. If you would like to do something like this, this is the law for you, you know. So I really believe that there is a kind, there is a union, considering all the branches of the republic, against, you know, to defeat this kind of attempt. So I don't believe that it's possible to see again that. And now I think it's a kind of second inauguration of Lula, I think, considering all the results of the thing. So if they expect to have a coup against the institutions, against the elected government, I think the result was the opposite. Simple, the opposite. We have now a democracy strengthened, you know, a strengthened democracy, considering the result of, you know, of the attack. So little by little, we are seeing a good part. Also, you know, the business man and the politicians who were Bolsonaro's allies is starting to build alliance with Lula's government. So it's a kind of a pragmatic question also, considering it's a part of the isolation of those groups, including who support Bolsonaro in the past. Now is supporting the government because they need the public policies. They need the public, you know, the national budget to move forward, you know, their profits, to have their profits, to organize their politics. So I think little by little, we can see this isolation of those kinds of groups.
Yeah, and as we see that isolation growing, the government will want to get on with its own agenda. We saw Lula, I think yesterday, we were informing people about the fact that Lula's announced his international tour. He's going to go to Argentina, and he's going to go to the US and to China. So it shows that Brazil is sort of turning its face out into the world, whereas before they were, you know, certainly looking inwards under Bolsonaro, and definitely after Trump left office. But what do you think are the main priorities for this government going forward, aside from this combating these anti-democratic elements? You know, the most pressing issues for Brazil, whether it be on the economy or things like this, what will be the first policies that we're likely to see from Lula?
Yeah, we are seeing here, this the slogan, you know, of the government is union and reconstruction. Union against the far right, against this tragedy that we lived in during the Bolsonaro's government, but reconstruction of the country. It's important to understand that Brazil is one of the most important producers of food in the world, for example. And we have inside Brazil 30 million people facing hunger, and at least 125 million people in the food insecurity. So this is the priority of the thing, food. Food, you know, by morning, you know, and the three meals by day, you know, this is the what Lula said all the time. But more than that, there is a second challenge and a second priority, you know, that is defend environment and sustainable development, considering that during the Bolsonaro's government, we saw Bolsonaro facilitating those kind of reactionary sectors of the society, the farmers, especially the farmers, that is, you know, we saw many, many news during the Bolsonaro's government of the, you know, burning Amazon, burning many forests here in Brazil, facilitating the opposite of the control, the non-control, I don't know how can I say that, the non-control of the weapons to kill indigenous people, peasants, and so on. And also, I think there is a third priority, that is the tax reform, to put what President Lula is talking all the time, to put the poor on the national budget and the rich on the income tax. So this is important too. I think those are the priorities that we are facing here in Brazil. The most important and urgent is defeat hunger, of course. But then how to develop the economy, to reconstruct the country, I think those are the priorities. So environment and also tax reform. Those are the political agenda of the government that we are seeing these days.
So also this week, as you mentioned, the protection of the Amazon is really important, and it's something that, you know, we heard people talk about during the campaign, and people are going to be paying attention to what Lula's government does with regards to the environment and indigenous peoples, and not necessarily because they care about these issues, but because this is what happens when you are a leftist leader in our region. All eyes are on what you do, and of course there is more criticism. Obviously, it's a very key country because of how large it is and because of how much of the Amazon is in Brazil and its neighboring countries. But, you know, we saw those fires in 2019. And of course, that was a reason for really just AstroTurf protests against Evo Morales, which, you know, were part of this big coup plan. So, you know, this is something that we're going to be following as well. Did you have a chance to hear what all these different representatives of Lula's government had to say in Davos this week? We saw his finance minister, Fernando Haddad, and of course, Marina Silva, the environmental minister, and a couple other Brazilian lawmakers as well. Talk to us a little bit about what Lula has said he plans to do, and what Marina says she plans to do.
Yeah, this is very important, because during the Bolsonaro's government, Brazil had the problem, not Brazil, but the foreign minister of Bolsonaro had mentioned that it's a proud to be a paria in the international world if you are defending, you know, ideas against abortion, you know, if we are attacking the Latin American integration. And so Brazil, you know, had many steps back, considering the position and the role of Brazil internationally. So I think this meeting in Davos can help us to put, and also during the COP27, in fact, in Egypt, Lula already put that idea. Brazil is back, you know, Brazil is back to the world politics. So I think aligned with the government's agenda, the participation of both ministers is super important to show the world that Brazil is back in international relations. So also, for what we back, you know? So we are back to defend the environment, you know, to be an example of social justice and build an international alliance against fascism and Nazism, as I already mentioned. And I think the thing that we could highlight, considering the contributions of Haddad, the economy minister, and also Marina Silva, the environment ministry, if I can highlight some ideas, I think in the case of Fernando Haddad, he spoke about, you know, of the capacities and the accumulated knowledge that Brazil has to promote an energy integration project in Latin America based on clean energies. So this is one thing that is important because many countries of the region face a lack of investment, you know, on this kind of sector of energy. And in fact, depends a lot to import energy from the United States, from other countries. So I think this is a good shot, you know, considering this environment of integration of the region, you know, and also to bring more investment in a clean energy. I think this is a super important thing. And also this is very well seen to be able to attract investment, as I already mentioned, at the same time as it strengthens regional integration ties and makes electricity cheaper for Latin American people. On the other hand, we had Marina Silva's speech and contributions, who is, we know that, an internationally respected environmental leader, also reinforces the positive image of Brazil. I think this is very important because Marina Silva's well known leadership of the environmental aspects. So I think he could reinforce this positive image of Brazil as a Brazil that implements public policies in defense of the life of forests, indigenous people, peasants, the animals, and also a Brazil that defends life and promotes social development. We are seeing a new Brazil with that, and this idea of union and reconstruction is, I think, very important aspect of this government, especially considering all that we have talked here today, the response, pro-democracy that we could see in this government, not just in the national level, but in the international level with this position of President Lula to do this international call against fascism and Nazism.
Is that Giovanni? I just had one more to add in terms of Brazil going forward. And that is, what do you think Lula's vision is for Brazil's relationship to the United States? Because under Bolsonaro, it is a complex relationship in some ways, because under Trump, Brazil was obviously tied at the hip to the US and to US policy. Obviously, they implemented a lot of they helped to implement a lot of Trump's policies, like the attacks on Venezuela, like cooperating with the coup in Bolivia. But then when Biden is elected, like, his kids are going around talking about the Bolsonaro's children are talking about the fact that the election was rigged, and, you know, insulting Biden on a personal level on a number of occasions, which I think definitely soured relations. And Biden himself was obviously willing to try and work with Bolsonaro, but it seems that Bolsonaro himself almost sabotaged that relationship. So I don't know. What is Lula's vision for how to go forward in terms of a relationship with the US?
Yeah, sure. I think we can check the past. Lula is the third government of Lula, so we cannot expect any surprise considering that. And especially during Lula's government, we just saw the increase of foreign trade between the countries, a good relationship between them. Lula is a pragmatic president. He knows that the United States is the second most important partner in terms of international relations with Brazil, and knows that many of the conflicts around the world depends on the position of the United States too. So the position of Lula is always to construct bridge, not to explode them. We could see to someone, the president, that explode bridges, considering Bolsonaro, that we could identify. And I can say, I think, in my opinion, that Bolsonaro do not have any relationship, do not put stimulate the relationship between Brazil and the United States. He put the position that he construct relationship with Trump. I think it's that. And so Now, I think the vision of Lula is the same, to reinforce the foreign, trade, the political relationship, and all the time construct bridges, not to explode them. So I think would be the same and will increase the relationship, especially considering what Bolsonaro did in the end of his mandate, considering the bad relationship that he had with Biden administration.
Yeah, and following on from that, we got a question from Josh in the chat saying, on Brazil internationally, what course is Lula government most likely to take with China and the BRICS countries, and how will the gringo mafia react to that? And I mean, I do think the reaction that we've seen from the United States to the January 8th sort of coup attempt, obviously the United States being very, you know, they condemned what was going on, they expressed their support for Lula's government, etc. And for me, when I see that, I think they're trying to get in Lula's good books to, you know, to make sure that he doesn't turn to China. They know that if the United States goes too hard, too fast in terms of backing these right-wing groups, then that pushes Lula into the arms of China. That's my hypothesis. But yeah, what would you say, Giovanni, to in terms of Lula's vision about relationship with China and BRICS countries, especially Russia, which of course the United States is putting conditions on most countries about, you know, cutting off relations with Russia and China if you're to be in their good books?
Yeah, it's a big country. We don't need to follow directly China or United States. I think this is very, very clear in Lula's mind. And all Itamaraty, this is the foreign minister that we have here in Brazil that is in charge of our foreign policy. So it means Brazil needs to be independent. It's a country with sovereignty, and to reinforce that, I think this is the objective, and all the efforts will be that Brazil, in the international level, is independent. So we need to construct good relationships with United States, as I mentioned, the second most important partner that we have internationally, and also good relationship with China. It's our first, our main important foreign partner. So I don't believe that Lula will, especially, for example, just to put the things, I don't believe that Lula will support or condemn Zelensky, considering the war in Ukraine, for example. I don't believe this kind of position. Lula don't want to put the clearly position of Brazil. I think all the aspects that we can construct bridges with other countries, reinforce our trade internationally, our political relations, this will be the path that Lula will move forward to organize our foreign policy. I really don't believe that this is a kind of primary error, I think, to follow, you know, blind, to be a blind person, a blind country, following, considering the importance, the role, the size of Brazil in terms of economy, politics, and so on. That's why also Bolsonaro lost a lot of support from important businessmen during his government because of the way that he was aligned with other countries. His position was being, you know, to these businessmen, especially the financial market inside Brazil, it means the national banks here in Brazil, many of them, including, they wrote a letter during the Bolsonaro's government saying, we cannot accept this kind of government, the way as the things are being leading, because we are losing money, we are spending a lot of national budget with things that cannot produce the conditions of our development. So he faces a lot of opposition, including of the bourgeoisie here in Brazil, considering the position, the international position that he adopts. So I think the vision of Lula will be more pragmatic and simple, do not break the relationship with the bourgeoisie that he could construct, considering the bourgeoisie that were against Bolsonaro, if it's about the economy or the fascism.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've actually been charged, you know, as a media outlet, of being very favorable to Lula. A lot of people kind of from our audience in the US have said that we've done a lot of promoting of Lula. And I absolutely reject that. I don't think in any way we've been overly favorable to Lula. I think that what we've done is actually precisely tried to communicate what we hear here on the ground in Brazil when I was here during the campaign. And of course, even before the campaign, you know, and everything that happened during the Bolsonaro administration and since Dilma Rousseff was taken out in the coup, that people wanted to see Lula return to power. And there is a lot of, you know, despite how some people would characterize the election as being close in terms of the millions of votes between the two candidates, I would say on the ground throughout the country, it felt really much in favor of Lula. It felt like so many people who didn't agree with Lula on a lot of issues actually decided for, you know, one large issue or another that they were going to support him, you know, such as like the different Christian groups, the evangelicals and everyone else who came to these different events. They held events and they gave him their endorsement. A lot of conservative people in this country decided that they didn't like Bolsonaro's response to COVID-19. And so people had all sorts of reasons to support Lula. And I think that's what we're trying to communicate, that there's just a lot of support for the different things that he brought out on his platform during the campaign. And you're.
Wow. We just lost Camila very abruptly. I'm not sure what happened there. But
there's something that I would like to mention. I don't know if I can do that, Ali.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Okay, because one thing that is important to mention that, of course, we have this breath, you know, considering our past, you know, the Bolsonaro government. So all of us are facing, you know, the happiness to see that, including just right after the attacks in Brasilia, we could see the fast response of the institutions, but also the energy of the people. You know, we have hope considering all our past. But it's important to understand that everything, all of this, we are not just in the paradise. We have many challenges in front of us. And especially, we have a lot of left organization, including left organization, that we know that to be possible, this alliance of Lula with many sectors of the bourgeoisie and the right wing, the liberals one, we are talking about a government of a wide front. It means that there are many, many limitations of the possibilities of to move forward a policy that can, in fact, go through to defeat the problems of the people, to move forward this agenda of social justice. What I'm talking about here, I'm talking about that we have a lot of, for example, neoliberal people that are part of the government. They are assuming important public administration roles. So there is a huge responsibility of the left-wing organizations to establish, nowadays is a huge debate inside the politics here in Brazil, that the need of construction of a left front that can, in fact, pressure, also to press, to have this pressure, the pressure against the government to move forward a people's agenda, you know, to mobilize all the things that is required in terms in related to housing, related to the food, related to employee. So there are many, many challenges, including to the left-wing organization. We cannot expect everything from the institution and from the government that everything will be solved now. No, now we have a best conditions to struggle for our rights, and we have our responsibility to. And I'm talking about the left-wing organization, the progressive people, the activists, the leadership from the left, that we also need to do our part of the job to organize ourselves, to support the government, to don't do the same work of the right wing, the far right, you know, to destabilize the government. But on the other hand, we also need to mobilize ourselves, because we really know that this kind of configuration, I don't know, the way as the government is being formed, there are many, many limitations to move forward all the agenda of the people here in Brazil to have these rights ensured, you know. So this is important to not just, you know, to be just a supporter of the government. Of course, I support the government. I'm against Bolsonaro, of course. But it's important to note that we have many challenges, including the left wing, to pressure the government too.
Okay. Can you hear me? Let me know if you can hear me, Giovanni. Okay, I had to unplug and plug my earphone back in. So one of the most interesting things was I looked forever to find that tweet from last night, which was of Lula saying that the extreme right is an international movement. You've already mentioned that. This is why I'm going to propose a unity of democratic progressivism around the world so as not to allow the resurgence of fascism. You already touched on it, but it just for me, it makes me very curious to know what he means by that, because of course we've experienced so many attacks by the opposition right-wing forces in different countries of Latin America and beyond Latin America, of course. So, I mean, it's a big question mark for me because, you know, we don't really know if he's thinking more about Brazil, but also saying like there's this case and that case. But it's a real problem that could, you know, stand to have a little bit of, unity in battling that on a common front with different governments. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, because for me, it's kind of like open-ended. I think we'll see when we see, because I'm not going to get my hopes up, because I think this is something that needed to be done a long time ago. And I don't want to be critical of, you know, countries that are not mine, not talking about Brazil, but the other ones that have faced, you know, a lot of violence and didn't deal with the issues. And a lot of these, you know, issues have been reoccurring. So I'm really curious to see what he actually meant by that.
Yes. I think all of us still need to understand better what he is saying about that. But just the fact that having a president, as you know, the international eyes are put in Brazil for many reasons. So having this possibility of a president, considering that, you know, Lula is put in that position, we need to construct an international alliance. I think this can help the politics around the world to put Brazil as a relevant country, you know, to move forward any kind of politics. But in fact, I think all the conversation that Lula will have, you know, and during the meeting of CELAC here in Buenos Aires in the end now of the month, then United States, then in China, in Europe, I think he has some trips in Europe to talk with some leaderships there. I think with this conversation, we can have a better ground, you know, the clues of what he's talking about when he's saying that. But just the fact having that as an international call announcing that, I think it opened the possibility to think about, well, what are the policies that we need to move forward internationally to construct this kind of alliance? I think the commitment is clear, but how, if this can... this will result, I don't know yet. We need to ask that to Lula. Please do that and tell to everyone.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much, Giovanni, for joining us today. Giovanni Del Prete, I'm just going to take off this banner so you can see his Twitter handle if you want to follow Giovanni on social media. And obviously, Camila as well is also in Sao Paulo. I'm here in La Paz in Bolivia. I'm still yet to make it to Brazil. It's a dream of mine to one day do so. Just before we close, just read out a couple of comments from the chat. That's what's up. It says Lula is the lesser of two evils.
Terrible.
And Josh says, thanks. Love the work you'll do.
Thank you,
Josh. And if you enjoyed this, make sure to subscribe on YouTube. We do this show every week for everyone on YouTube. We also have our podcast every week for our subscribers on Patreon. So make sure to sign up there as well for all of the content. Thank you for joining us, Giovanni.
Yeah, thank you so much. Streaming is like something new to us. We obviously started streaming, or maybe perhaps not obviously, but quite recently when I was here for the election. It, you know, before we very slowly this past year started podcasting, and it's something we want to do. We think it's really important because, you know, we're one of few outlets that are that is permanently based in Latin America and is able to do this sort of content in English and find such good guests like Giovanni. And so thank you so much, Giovanni, a passionate or an internationalist by passion who is passionate and has a lot to say and a lot of good analysis for us. And he conducts postgraduate studies on geopolitics of the Amazon and works at the International People's Assembly, as do many other of our comrades, particularly here in Sao Paulo. And he's a militant of the Brazil Popular Movement, the Movimiento Brasil Popular. And it's just been great speaking to you. And I was able to hear from you on another panel that we were on together. And you have so much information to share with us. So it's absolutely great to have you on. And we're happy to have you on again at any time.